Larger? A bit, yes. Yeah. Zamba Compare, a handy network capture diff tool for SMB traffic. When I first read the title, I got confused because I asked myself, what do mobile phones have to do with it? Because the in Germany, we call mobile phones handy, and my mind was so tired, or I don't know. So, are we done? Oh, on mute.
1, 2, 1, 2. Yep.
Yeah, have much fun.
So, this presentation is about SMB CMP, a new tool I wrote. So, who I am? I'm Aurélien Abtel. I work at SUSE in the Samba team, where I mainly focus on the SMB kernel client. But I also work on Samba and other SMB related tools like Wireshark. So, this talk is about different debugging approach I use when I have to work on SIFS or Samba and such. And one of the new tools I wrote to help me with it. So it's mostly useful for developers, but also for it can be also useful for administrators who can use some of these techniques to help diagnose the network issues they have. So initially I was just going to talk about the new tool, but it would have been really, really little content, so I decided to talk about other techniques. So debugging is pretty hard. There is no generic method to always, you know, debug everything. Some approaches works better than others for certain bugs. For network-related bugs, and specifically SMB, the bugs can be either in the client, in the server. Sometimes it can be, if you're really unlucky, it can be in both. Sometimes the specifications are wrong because the server is doing something that makes sense, but specification says otherwise, or sometimes it's unspecified, and so each implementation has a different behavior. So something to keep in mind when you debug stuff. It can be kind of blurry sometimes. And so there are a lot of possible failures. So the goal is to usually isolate as much as you can before actually digging into the code so that you can save time and energy. So I guess this one is pretty well known, git bisect. So if you don't know it, the idea is you have different versions. One of them works, and it used to work in the past, and now it doesn't. So you basically have a regression bug. So what you want is to find a good commit, a bad commit, and find the one in between that actually broke your program. So the smart thing about git bisect, this is not specifically for Git. You can use the same idea with other version control software. So you pick one commit in the middle, and whether it's good or bad, it becomes the new boundary to search in. And so basically you divide your search space by two at each steps. And so this was really useful when I started on SIFS. I didn't know the history of the projects and when new features got in and such. So I ended up about 100,000 commits to look through between major kernel releases. And so, yeah, just in 17 steps, I was able to find something like this. So that's a really, really powerful tool, I think. And it can be automated too. So if you have a script to reproduce your problem, and you can use the exit code to say if it's good or bad. You can look at the Git documentation if you want to know more, but yeah, this is a pretty useful tool. So obviously you can use different clients and different servers, because sometimes the base section is not practical because the feature was already buggy when it was implemented, so there is no good commit you can use. So you can try different combinations of server and clients. You know, you can try Windows clients against Samba, SMB client against Windows, see how they behave and such. I also like to write to help me debug. I like to have little reproducers. So if I cannot use SMB client, I You can use different things to read those reproducers. The Samba has a torture test framework where you can craft the packets like you want. Recently, I've used Pyke, which I really like. It's a pure Python library, and you have easily tweakable fields and such. I use this to test the SMB3 POSIX extensions I showed yesterday in Steve's talk. So I know Microsoft also has a very extensive testing suite on GitHub. It's open source. I haven't looked into it yet. Maybe someone from Microsoft can tell us more about it. But I'm not sure how practical it is for one-off little scripts. So the obvious other method is logs. So in Samba, you can just put the log level at the max, and you have a lot of stuff to look through. I have a little Emacs mode I use for that. I have a screenshot here. It's pretty cool. You have the colored output, and if you press enter on any of the message, it actually jumps to the source code on the right. So it's pretty useful. And you have the like all the SMB2 requests and the response and the status on the bottom. And you can jump to them by pressing enter. And also, like this specific request, all the code that happened the moment it was received up to the response is highlighted, so you know which part of the log is relevant. So that also helps going through the logs. As for the kernel, well, the usual stuff I use to make it verbose is this. So basically, it enables as much debugging as possible. There's also ftrace, which I haven't used much, but it's pretty good. Basically, you can start recording, do something that doesn't work, and then stop recording, and you can look at the call trace and where the execution path was and the call stacks for all this moment you recorded in the kernel code. So yeah, I put a link to that demos it. It's pretty useful. So there's the network capture. So this is kind of like a wire log. Sometimes the logs kind of lie, software logs, you know, it says something, actually something else happened, but wires never lies. You can always look at the every little bit in there. So this is usually the filter I use. So SMB, SMB2, so this also includes 3 and above. DNS and Kerberos can be useful sometime too. So the debugger, so this is kind of obvious, but for Samba, it's not really useful, I think. It's often impractical, because every time you have a breakpoint, it usually adds timeouts, because while you look at your memory and stuff, your client times out, and then you know you can actually go to the point you want to, and yeah, it's not really practical. For Samba especially, so the server forks on user sessions. So you have to follow, you have to tell JDB to follow the child. And if you want both processes to be under JDB's control, one of them has to be stopped while you inspect the other. And so it's never really practical if you have many child and user sessions and such. And for the kernel, I use QEMU to debug the kernel to work on it. And so it has a built-in JDB server. So you can add -S, and it will actually run a JDB server on port 1234. And so in another window, you can just start JDB. So the first command the kernel comes with helper scripts in Python. So you can like list super blocks, go through processes lists. It has nice helpers for that. And so you just point it to your Linux binary, and then you say connect to localhost on port 1234. So you can actually step into the kernel and do breakpoints and such. It works pretty well. Except, so the kernel cannot be compiled without optimization. So it has the -o2 usually. And so if you have inline functions, for example, if you disable optimization, the inline doesn't happen. So you end up with multiple definitions, like it doesn't compile basically. I know there's some work for this. I saw a mailing list post about this to fix this. It's fairly recent. But also, yeah, since it's optimized, you have order execution, like you jump between different lines and it's kind of confusing sometimes. And many variables are completely optimized out. So you end up having to print the like disassembled version of the function and print the register and figure out which register it is. And when you have many functions to look through, it's not really practical. So eventually, when you exhausted all of your approach to isolate code, you like there's no way around it. You have to look at the code, dig into the code. So you know, you read the specs, read the corresponding code path on both the server and the client. You look for bug typos, wrong logic, something that differs from the specifications, and you just do this over and over. So it's a lot of work, takes a lot of time and energy. So you really want to reduce this as much as possible. So the thing I didn't talk about, which the new tool I wrote is about, is so when you have sometimes it's when you use different software to test something, you end up having a trace of something that works and a trace of something that doesn't. So you can actually compare both and see what's different, what makes the working trace work. And so, yeah, you look hard at both traces, try to see what the good client is doing good and what the bad one is doing bad. So you compare packets, fields, and such. So to do this, well, you open, use Wireshark. So you have two windows side by side. You expand all the little handles, one after the other. Sometimes there are a lot of fields nested into each other. So you end up looking left, right, clicking like an animal. You know, tick, tick, tick. It's not really practical. So eventually, yeah, you have to switch to different packets. You do the click dance all over again. So your index hurts. You keep expanding fields because you know it's never going to be different here until it does. Your lead hacker eyes might miss a difference. There are white space cases difference. Slash directions, flags, there are many things you can miss. And also there are false positives, so the timestamps might be different. You have random GUIDs, message IDs, file handles. These things might be different from one run to the other, but it doesn't mean it's something that is wrong. Or anything crypto also will have hashes, which will be different. So how can we automate this? So Wireshark is really good. But there is no nice way to interact with it programmatically. There's not really any API. There is a text version of it called T-Shark. So there you can, when you build a Wireshark, it actually builds it with it. It has a raw text output. I'll show you an example of the output after. You can also export it to JSON and XML. And while looking through the source of Wireshark, I also found there's a daemon version of it called SharkD. But it's not really documented. From what I gathered, you can load a trace, and so if you don't want to load the trace all over every time you want to change the filter, you can just load it once and query it through the network. So it kind of saves time, loading time. So this is what the T-Shark output looks like. It's like the summary view of Wireshark. So you put, can you see? Yeah. Okay. This is your dash R points to the file name you want to read. Dash Y is your filter. So yeah, this is the summary output. If you add dash V, it will show you the detailed output. So if you want both the summary and the detail, you have to run both. So what I ended up writing is a little... So first of all, I wrote a little prototype in Emacs. Put a little Stallman for you, for your enjoyment. The first version, yeah, is in Emacs. I have a link there. So basically, it was just Wireshark in Emacs. And it was all text mode, and I could use the usual Emacs shortcuts to look through stuff, so it was already a big improvement. But it got me thinking it would be better with, you know, a div view and colors and stuff. And I thought if people want to use it, it has to be out of Emacs also. So I decided to move to Python and use curses for the layout. So it calls T-Shark in the background and has two modes, single trace, which is kind of like curses Wireshark. It has both summaries and details. And there's a diff mode where you have two traces and then the diff at the bottom of the detail. So yeah, I'll show you a little demo. So the first trace, I have is I'll just do a single trace mode. I'm passing here the session ID and session key used for. So this trace uses encryption. So this way it allows to decrypt the traffic. So you can move around. It's kind of like Wireshark, except I've hidden all the fields I don't care about, and I highlight like errors and stuff like this. So you can use your keys to move around, and yeah, it's pretty useful already. So yeah, another nice feature. So if you build your kernel with a, you can build it with a debug option that dumps all the encryption keys. Obviously, you only use this for debugging. But if you have, so this is like the serial output of the kernel, and here is the key dumped. So if you save the serial output, you can just point it. You can point indicate it to it to SMB SMP, and. This way it will extract the keys there and you don't have to figure it out yourself. So yeah. So here's the diff. So straight away in the negotiate, you can see on the left, signing is required on the left one, and it's just enabled on the right one, for example. So you can look around, see what's different. You see the GUID is a false positive. So you have time differences, timestamps. But so even though you see all the false positive, it's good to know like nothing else is different in those packets. So you don't have to waste time looking at the fields and such. So we had
filter.
What?
We thought about filters.
Like remove the false positive, you mean? Or
yeah. So
I thought about it, but I haven't. Done it yet?
I had another question. Do you do any sort of like a regular expression matching in case there are? So the captures aren't always identical. If there's more packets in one capture than the other, mm-hmm. Do you try to match them up so you can?
So I don't try to match them up, but you can. So to move the cursor on both sides, I use only one key. But I have separate keys if I want to like and I can still move them at the same time.
Okay,
so if it gets out of sync, I can just do it like this. So yeah, there's not much different on this one.
For the encryption key extraction, have you looked at doing the same for Samba logs?
So when I was debugging something in Samba, I actually had I added some debug statement to do it, but I didn't send it upstream or anything.
Okay.
It was just a simple. So this one is an actual bug, I think, I ran into. This was during, while I was implementing pre-authentication integrity in SIFS. So I think, yeah, as you can see, the traces start to change starting this from this packet. Like on the left, you see access denied, on the right, you see what's properly validated. So the error in this case was just that the validate info was wrong. The signature was wrong, so it failed there. What else can I show you? I guess. So this one is pretty long. It's so I had it was using DFS on with two indirection levels. So DFS, you know, it's like symbolic links through servers. And so basically you connect to one share, which has a link to another share on a different server, which has also a link to another thing. So there was like three machines involved. And the difference starts to appear around the end. Also, this is a SMB1. The example I showed before was SMB2, this is SMB1, so it also works with that. Oh yeah, I remember now. So on this one, there was no like major difference in the traces, which meant the error was in the logic of SIFS and not in the wire, the stuff sent on the wire. So I didn't have to look in that. That's shorter than I expected, but that's it. Any other questions?
Yeah. I have to learn how to be efficient.
I know your title said SMB compare, but do you have plans to support other dissectors as well, or it's only SMB?
It could simply work with other dissectors. There's not much specific to SMB in it.
Okay.
But I just needed it for SMB, and I wanted some stuff like highlighting errors in the trace. And so for this, it's kind of dissector specific. So I made my life easier and just said it's for SMB. But actually, it could be used for other stuff. Yeah.
How about encrypted traffic?
So I showed a demo of this earlier. And so in the single view mode, I can just provide the, so the first thing is the session ID, and then is the session key. And the encryption stuff can be computed from this. So here you can see here the decrypted traffic, and you can just look through it. Like a regular packet.
But you don't have that for the compare mode?
Yeah, I do. So this is the one I showed earlier, this one, yeah. So I point the kernel logs with the keys dumped out to SMB CMP, so it can extract the keys from there. So this this file is the kernel output without signing. This one is the kernel output with signing, and those are the two traces, so the one with signing and the one without. So you see two encrypted traffic with different, so they are encrypted with different keys, but I can still diff them. So yeah, obviously the signature is different, but yeah, that's not an issue. So yeah.
Further questions? No? Okay, yeah, then thank you very much. So I guess we'll have an extra long break.